Good evening. Let's call to order the Sustainability Commission meeting of September 15th, 2025 at 7 o'clock p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of our diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. This Sustainability Commission meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the commissioners can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda items being considered by the commission for consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the commission's authority, generally referred to as within the commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on Sustainability Commission's agenda. Use the Show Caption button to view captions on Zoom. Comments on matters not on the agenda or presentation items must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communication. Comments on agenda items must be submitted prior to the time I close the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep their comments to the time period set by the public comments for the agenda item, which is strictly enforced. Guidelines will be posted on the city's website and on the Sustainability Commission's meeting agenda. Please join me in the salute to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Raby, maybe please have the roll call.
Yes, Vice Chair Pistone.
Sorry. Here.
Commissioner Chang.
Here.
Chair Nabhan.
Here.
Commissioner Jansen.
Here.
Commissioner Ford.
Here.
Commissioner Koontz.
Here.
And Commissioner Pronto.
Here. Here.
And Councilmember Srinivasan is here. So we have seven members present and we have a quorum. Thank you.
This is now the public's opportunity to address the commission on topics not listed on tonight's agenda and presentation items. This section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after the public hearing general business section of the meeting. Individuals may only speak once during oral communications. The Sustainability Commission meeting is a limited public forum, and the commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the commission's authority, which is known as the commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are outside the commission's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the commission to conduct its business in a reasonably efficient manner and protect the rights of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Please submit a speaker card to Ms. Raby. Raise your digital hand now or dial star 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Does anyone wish to speak under oral communications that are in person?
There's no one in person or online wishing to speak at this time.
Okay, I will go ahead and close oral communications. The first item on our agenda is item 250226, gather input on the East Channel Trail alternatives. I will turn it over to staff to provide an update on this item.
Good evening, members of Sustainability Commission. My name is Esther Jung, and I'm a traffic engineer with City's Transportation and Traffic Group, doing a special projects related to transportation. I've joined the city about a little over 7 months ago now, and I'm excited to be here tonight to talk about my very first project with the city. Today, I will be providing an overview of the East Channel Trail study, which officially kicked off in late 2024. And in this presentation, I will walk you through the project goals, the overall timeline, key feedback we've received so far, and what's coming next, including how you can stay informed and involved as the study progresses.
Maybe I'll just say next. Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that. The East Channel is major flood channel managed by Valley Water today. It stretches about 5.5 miles running north-south along the eastern side of Sunnyvale from the Bay Trail all the way down to Inverness Way. From Inverness to Homestead Road, the channel continues underground. Next. Yes. The East Channel runs alongside key community destinations and has potential to serve as a vital connector. A trail along the East Channel maintenance road would connect to major Caltrain and VTA transit centers, link with several existing and planned bikeway intersections, provide safe pedestrian and bicycle access to schools, parks, and employment centers, and maintain Valley Water's access for operations and maintenance. Where did this study come from? In August 2020, the city adopted active transportation plan, which is comprehensive citywide evaluation, looking at where city could invest in better walking and biking. Out of that, city provided East Channel Trail as one of the top priority projects to focus on. City then acquired funding from VTA Measure B and donation from Google to fund the study to look further at the feasibility of potential trail along the East Channel Maintenance Road. And in June 2024, city contracted a consulting firm to walk through the study. And before I continue, I want to note that the city has not identified funding for design or construction at this time. This phase is focused on just gathering information and input, hearing from community and impacted agencies about their vision and ideas, and conducting technical analysis to better understand cost, opportunities, and challenges that will come with future design and construction. With that in mind, let's look at the opportunities the East Channel offers. The channel corridor includes a wide maintenance road as wide as 12 to 16 feet, which is sufficient to accommodate a shared use path. And it also provides direct access to 4 parks and John W. Christian Greenbelt, 8 schools within half mile, and key employment centers such as Moffett Park. In addition, it offers important connection to existing and proposed bikeway network. But there are also major barriers, and this study will be evaluating how to address them. Crossing El Camino Real, Caltrain Railroad, Central Expressway, Tasman Drive, US 101, and Highway 237 will all require coordination and approval from other agencies. In addition, there are right-of-way conflicts and areas where channel alignment runs underground on private property. As you can see in the picture here, there are also vertical height constraints. In some locations, PG&E high voltage towers present clearance challenges, raising concerns for bicyclists who might come into close contact with supporting towers. Finally, we're also evaluating erosion issues along the maintenance road, which could affect long-term safety and sustainability. The study team prepared a large roadmap showing all of these physical opportunities and constraints along the East Channel Trail. This map has been shared with the public at our previous committee meetings and also available on project website for anyone who would like to review it in more detail. In addition to looking at opportunities and constraints along East Channel Trail, we have also studied examples from across the Bay Area, and these include Stevens Creek Trail and Permanente Creek Trail in Mountain View, San Tomas Aquino Creek Trail in Santa Clara, and most recently opened Regnar Creek Trail in Cupertino. We have already connected with staff from these cities to learn more from their experiences, understanding the challenges that they faced, the outcomes of their projects, and the ongoing maintenance issues that we should be mindful of as we move forward. What is proposed East Channel Trail study? The project aims to study the current channel, recommend the best route for the trail, whether that's through on-street or navigating challenge, crossing challenges, and provide implementation strategy for the city. If the City Council decided to move forward and pursue funding, the study will guide us on where to start, how to phase it, what permits will be required, and what the estimated cost would be for each section of the proposed trail. The goals of the East Channel Trail are clear. We want the trail to be feasible so that it is achievable within engineering and policy constraints, high quality to provide safe, comfortable, and memorable experience, connected, linking to key destinations across Sunnyvale, and cost-effective. We are financially sensible for both construction and long-term maintenance. We are also conducting extensive public outreach to make sure we hear from the community. Our technical advisory committee includes key agencies and stakeholders such as Valley Water, VTA, Caltrans, Caltrain, Santa Clara County Roads and Airports, the City of Cupertino, the King's Academy and local school districts, PG&E, and Moffitt Business Park. We also have a community group called Trail Ambassadors. They are community members selected to serve as a liaisons and help share information with their neighbors. Alongside them are what's called trailblazers, who are volunteers not formally selected, but still eager to help with outreach. And finally, we are reaching out directly to broader community through neighborhood associations, mobile home parks, school events, pop-ups at special events and farmers market, as well as presentations to businesses and city commissions. And here's the overall study timeline. Phase one, which ran from fall 2024 to spring 2025, focused on existing conditions and community input. Phase two, where we are now, is about analyzing alternatives, identifying preferred route, and developing concept design. And phase three in 2026 will complete the concept design and implementation strategy. To recap phase one, we studied the channel's existing conditions, looking at biological constraints, doing detailed mapping and collecting traffic counts at crossings and local streets. And just as importantly, we engaged community to introduce the project and gather feedback on existing conditions and understand community priorities for the trail. We reached people in a variety of ways. As mentioned earlier, we had a pop-ups that we connected over 300 community members. We showed up at Earth Day, Bike to Work Day, and El Camino Rio Ride. We also showed up at Sunnyvale Farmers Market and Grocery Outlet. We also had community meetings, two in person and one virtual for those who cannot attend in person. And we had a total of 52 participants. We also had a walking workshop, which is inviting community members to walk with us along the trail. We had three workshops in single day and had 68 participants. We also launched the first online survey that was open from January 25 to June 30th and received over 1,100 responses. And across all of our engagement events, several clear themes emerged from community input. For connectivity and accessibility, we heard a community call for a trail that is direct, ADA compliant, and user-friendly for walkers, bikers, and those with mobility needs. For environment considerations, community members emphasized the importance of protecting wildlife, supporting ecosystem health, and limiting human impacts. For privacy and fencing, residents adjacent to the trail raised concerns about privacy, noise, and fencing improvements. And for safety, top priorities included separation from vehicles, clear signage, and a strong sense of security on the trail. For management, maintenance, and trail features, community feedback emphasized long-term upkeep, flood prevention, and maintenance accountability, along with the vision of scenic ambience, useful amenities, and durable design. From our community survey, we learned about 2/3 of the respondents live within 3 blocks of the East Channel Trail. And here are some key highlights. For trail usage, 85% of the respondents said that they would use trail more than once a month, and 40% of adjacent residents said that they would use it daily. And as for most desired features that they want to see along trail, they want to see shade and native landscaping, lighting for safety and visibility, clear signs and maps, and seating and resting area. When asked about benefits, the community highlighted several themes. The trail would offer opportunities for nearby exercise, provide low-cost recreation, and create daily connection with nature. People also emphasized the importance of safety and access, seeing the trail as a way to travel between destinations while enjoying open space. But at the same time, we heard concerns. Safety came up frequently, both in terms of traffic interactions and personal security. Residents also raised issues about maintenance, homelessness, and privacy for those living adjacent to the trail. And these are important factors that we're going to carry forward into phase two. So for phase two, I walked through the full study timeline. Now I want to come back and highlight where we are today. This is stage where we are analyzing trail alternatives, identifying the preferred route, and developing concept designs. For phase two engagement, our goals are to collect input on trail route options, get feedback on on-street level crossings, address resident concerns about proximity, privacy, and safety. And we're also making sure to include Spanish-speaking residents through schools and PTAs, and working directly with neighbors to identify issues, explore solutions, and set expectations. One of the key questions we're addressing is how to cross major barriers along corridor. And as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, this slide highlights El Camino Real as an example where the channel runs underground beneath private property. For each barrier, we're considering both short-term on-street connections and long-term solutions, such as bridges and tunnels. Community feedback will be essential in helping us determine what's feasible and where to focus our resources. We're also gathering input on street level crossing, which we grouped into 3 tiers. Tier one applies to low speed, low traffic streets where trail users would have priority using treatments like high visibility crosswalks or flashing beacons. Tier two is for medium speed streets where priority is shared and tools like rectangular rapid flashing beacons or high intensity activity crosswalk, also known as HOG, signals may be appropriate. And tier three covers the busiest high speed roads where stronger interventions like full signal may be required to ensure safe crossings. As part of phase two, we're continuing extensive outreach to ensure community is part of the process. Engagement activities include trail ambassador and trailblazer meetings, community meetings, and pop-up events in high traffic locations. We'll also be conducting a second community survey along with additional workshops and school-based promotion and presentation. All of these efforts are designed to gather broad input on the trail route options and crossing treatments so that the study reflects the community's voice. And finally, we want to make it easy for people to stay informed and engaged. People can sign up on the project website to join our subscriber list, access all community meeting materials, and review frequently asked questions. We also encourage you to follow City on Instagram, Facebook, and Nextdoor for where we'll be posting updates about upcoming events and opportunities to get involved. And that's the end of the presentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the very informative presentation. I'll now open the floor to my other commissioners for discussion. And I do have an issue. The thing logged out, so I don't know how to log back in.
In the meantime, I can run it from here. I see Commissioner Pronto has a question. I can unmute him.
Thank you. I wanted to say this is a very interesting project that I think a lot of the citizens that are along the path of this and in the general neighborhood are really enthusiastic about what you're doing. So thank you for a comprehensive presentation. The area that I want to explore further with you, these are our drainage right-of-ways. And I haven't heard anything in your presentation about what the experience would be in the event of a high precipitation event. So I don't know. I'm not familiar with the geography that this drainage right-of-way is draining. I don't know how big the upstream catch area is. And so I don't have a feeling for how many inches of rain over a 6-hour period would cause a flood. And so my concern is a couple of things. Are we prepared for the increasing precipitation that we have seen? And are we going to have to renovate this drainage way in some way to increase its capacity that would affect what you're proposing to do? And so I think we need to understand if the capacity is reasonable for the amount that we're draining, the area we're draining through this drainage area. And it may be that the answer is it's fine, that we can catch 6 inches of rain in, you know, in 12 hours and handle all that water. Related to that would be if you have a relatively significant precipitation event, do we have any significant increase in flood? Does the water go up slowly, or do we have a wall of water coming down here? We know down in I think it was Texas, that there was a recent disaster down there with people who were right along the drainage area. And so that's what's in my mind is, what are the characteristics up here? What are our, you know, one in 500 year rain event predictions? And do we need to make any provision? So if the water's coming up rapidly, can the people get out of the way, or are there fences down both sides and they don't have any place to go? So I'm just concerned, since we're using what is primarily a drainage system, do we have any risks we haven't adequately looked at?
Thank you for the question. I'll try to respond as much as I know in terms of what we have found. So one of the tasks that we are doing as part of our existing conditions is to look into hydraulic models and see how much of water that we can handle. And so that is one study that is part of this study. And we are using models from Valley Water and also coordinating directly with Valley Water in terms of the storm water for stormwater prevention. And also working with other cities and looking at their examples to see how they handle a big floods or when there is a big rain. And part of the solution is to close the trail on certain days, and we will have to look at how to handle that, and that will be another conversation that we would have to do with our maintenance crew. Did I miss any?
Good evening, commissioners. Kevin Chen, senior traffic engineer for the city. So I think Esther covers most of it all. Since Commissioner Pronto, you had mentioned a 500 year, just kind of throwing some of the numbers out there too. So one of the projects that the Valley Water District is working on is they're working on an east-west channel upgrade, where the channel currently is designed for a 10-year flood. They're going to upgrade both channels to a 100-year flood, essentially capacity. So it's tenfold. You're mentioning 500. We don't design for 500. Usually you design for a 100-year flood.
So is that 100-year flood a proactive, what we think it's going to be in the next 100 years? Or is it looking historically at the last 100 years?
That's a really good question. I think it's probably a little bit of both, because, and you know, this is a little bit outside of my area of expertise now, so I'm speaking a little bit out of turn, but I'm going to try to address that. Typically, when you design anything that's kind of flood related, as far as I know, 100 year is typically what they would go up to. I mean, under
certain circumstances, I'm okay with 100 years.
Right.
I just want to make sure it's the appropriate 100 years.
Appropriate 100 years.
Well, I think we're expecting increased precipitation.
Right.
And so if we look at the last 100 years,
right,
we're going to be looking at a relatively low precipitation model as our 100-year hydraulic model.
I see.
Whereas if we look at the next 100 years and we think it's going to go up by 50%,
right,
then I would like us to use the hydraulic model for the 50% higher amount.
Understood. That then is beyond my expertise, and I don't know if I don't have the answer to that question.
Maybe you can look
into that for you.
Okay.
And then just for your information, the project right now is under design, so we'll be able to kind of ask that comment to Valley Water as well.
That would be very helpful. I just want to make sure that we're, you know, kind of taking a broad perspective,
yep,
given what this, you know, the fundamental purpose of this right of way is for.
Right. Yep.
All right, I'll jump in and say I've done a lot of work with stormwater projects, and typically we look at the last 100 years, and it's the biggest storm in the last 100 years. So it's normally a very significant event. So, okay. Commissioner Chang.
Hi, I also wanted to commend the really amazing work the slideshow had on it. I thought it was extremely comprehensive, and I really enjoyed how a lot of the presentation focused on engagement specifically with students. So I just wanted to ask for a clarification on one of those points. You mentioned that you would be doing school promotions or presentations, and I was wondering, would that be, for example, something mandatory that students would have to attend, or how would that look like implementation-wise?
We are conducting a promotion to schools in several ways. One, we've re actually received a request for someone to do a presentation to the school by the PTA of the school. And so we're looking for an opportunity where we can actually show up and present. Another way we are reaching out is to, we've been contacting both districts and schools to share our flyers or any upcoming events so that the students could attend either our upcoming community meetings or workshops or have us to show up in their schools to have a presentation.
And then I guess to follow up on that, I'm wondering if it would be possible to put this input survey in one of the high school district's advisory sessions, which are basically monthly meetings that the students watch a video on and either complete some kind of survey afterwards. So I think this would be kind of like the perfect fit for that, as well as our district has a sustainability group of students who meet monthly to work on sustainability issues for the district. And they meet at the district office with our superintendent and all our board members. So I think that would also be another really impactful place for a presentation to happen at.
Thank you for your recommendation. May I ask the school or the school district that you are belong to?
I go to Limburg High School, which is a part of FUHSD, so the schools I'm specifically referring to are like Fremont and Homestead High School.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Coons.
Thank you, Chair Nabhan, and thank you to city staff for your work on this project and for the presentation. It's really great to hear about this. First off, I do want to amplify you know, a point that Commissioner Chang was making. I think that, you know, as I'm looking at the route of this trail, that I see a, you know, connection that's running from the far north of Sunnyvale down to sort of nearish Fremont High School. And I know that you know, transportation specifically from North Sunnyvale to Fremont High School is something that's very difficult right now for students at that high school. So I think that outreach, particularly at Fremont High School, is important because that's a potential group of users that right now there isn't really a good safe way to bike from North Sunnyvale to Fremont High School. So making sure that this meets their needs is critical. Next up, I have some questions. So that was a comment. First off, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. So in term, if phase three, it sounds like that's when you're writing the implementation plan. So is part of phase three basically making sure that you have sort of a sense of what the timeline for building it would be and working on identifying the funding sources?
That's correct. Part of the phase three is, well, part of phase two is really understand what community prefers. And once we have that information in phase three, will give us better idea of what to look at and what to study, and which will dig a little bit deeper into the timeline and the cost.
Thank you. Let's see. Next question. How is the study, you know, affected, or, you know, is it simply a matter of updating? How is it affected by council's approval of the multi-use path along Tasman?
Once we present it to the city council, we will have a direction in terms of where to focus our study, because the trail is really long. It's about 6 miles, and it would be very difficult for us to do the study or going to design or construction all at once. So we would have to phase it out. So I think the city council's direction would help us determine where to prioritize the segment.
Okay, yeah, just I know that that's something that seems like this would connect to. So, and they just approved that. So thank you. All right. Can you talk a little bit about what you've learned from other cities in terms of strategies for minimizing the litter that's going into the channel, and also, you know, how to mitigate whatever might be ending up in the channel so it doesn't end up in the bay?
We have spoke with maintenance crew directly in Mountain View, and we have asked about the maintenance issues, including the litter. And I think they have minimized the number of the bins, and that's one way to minimize it. And and what else?
I believe so some of the feedback that we got, first of all, is sort of illegal dumping. So a way to kind of mitigate that would be to maybe install some sort of vertical obstacle preventing people from being able to back into the channel in order to do any illegal dumping. If the question is coming from a standpoint of somebody walking through the trail, how do we necessarily prevent somebody from throwing a trash over into the channel? You know, I think some of the feedback that we got is having if you have a trash bin sort of at the beginning and end of the trail, that sort of hopefully discourages people from doing so. Hopefully, you know, you kind of cater to the human nature of carrying your trash to the edge, to the end of the head or the end of that segment, and hopefully there's a bin there that will allow you to kind of discard your trash. We are separately also talking with Valley Water in terms of what's the best way to, how do they handle some of their trash pickup or just maintenance in general. So those are some of the feedbacks that we're hoping to receive from them as well. So coming at it from a couple of different standpoints.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. I appreciated that you guys highlighted, you know, that this came out of the active transportation plan. So showing that linkage to broader city plans. So I've got a couple more questions just in terms of other potential city plans that this probably intersects with. First off, you know, it sounded like, you know, people along the trail, some of the feedback you're hearing from the communities that people want shade. So anything that you can do, you know, to comment on, you know, what we think the additional tree cover that would be planted along the trail, you know, that would be helpful because I know that like as part of the urban forest management plan that the city has goals for adding, you know, a certain number of trees. And so, you know, quantifying what this trail's contribution would be to that, I think would be helpful. So I guess that's more of a comment than a question. And then also, the city has its green stormwater infrastructure plan. So I noticed that, you know, in the slides that there's some references to, you know, adding green stormwater infrastructure where there's, you know, sufficient width in the right of way to do that. So anything that you can do to, you know, quantify, you know, how much green stormwater infrastructure do we have? How does, you know, what percentage is that, you know, in terms of what the city's hoping to have citywide? Also, I think would be helpful in terms of, you know, illustrating that this isn't only a transportation corridor, but the other, you know, contributions that it can make to the city that we're wanting to have, you know, when this is all said and done. All right. Two more questions. So thank you to my fellow commissioners for indulging me. Is it correct to understand that this would be a corridor that like e-bikes and e-scooters could use? So it isn't just kind of conventional bikes, but also if people have batteries to help them along, is that something that could be used on this?
Yes, we have not discussed any ways to restrict or encourage different types of bikes here. And so we are at this time assuming that the use of e-bikes and e-scooters are allowed on this trail.
Okay, makes sense. And then last question, are there other, you know, thinking broadly across the city, is this kind of a unique opportunity with having this East Channel, or are there other corridors that might be, you know, fodder for future plans. I know that there's a Sunnyvale West Channel, which is only, I think, 3 miles. I'm curious if there's anything like that, or you know, similarly, you know, the John W. Christian Greenbelt's running along the top of one of the water pipelines. So what other things are out there that might be something that we could look at for future efforts like this?
My understanding is that East Channel is definitely unique in terms of the connection to not only the parks, schools, and employment center. And it is it's a north-south alignment that we've been looking for. It is close to Fair Oaks and Wolf, and people have talked about the needs of having a safe bikeway system and for north-south connections. And so this channel trail would provide a really safe bikeway for people to safely bike and walk.
Thank you.
And I do want to note that we have a trail ambassador. One of our trail ambassador is a junior high student from Columbia Middle School. So he has been representing student body.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Jansen.
Thank you. I'm not very organized in my questions, so I apologize. But this was a really nice presentation, and I will start by echoing that the outreach for this has been really, really good. I attended the thing at CMS, whenever that was, and it was like the people there were great, answered great questions. The presentation was good, but even beyond that, I've seen a lot. So thank you for all the time you've put into this. My first question, is there a link to this laid out on Google Maps? Because I know you have all of the screenshots and things, but sometimes I have a really hard time figuring out like exactly where the proposed routes are going.
It's not necessarily on Google Map platform, but we are working on creating a web portal that has an aerial view of our corridor, and that shows our corridor along our satellite view.
Okay, good. Yeah, that would be great to have because, like I said, sometimes it's a little hard to tell in areas where I don't know exactly where the East Channel runs. I would add to your list, talk to neighborhood associations. So I know that the Lakewood Village and Snail both have maybe monthly-ish newsletters. And so please make sure to leverage neighborhood associations in addition to the schools and PTAs. What else do I want to say? So I live close to Calabasas Creek and the northern side of that. And we have struggled a lot with litter in that area. And part of it is a unique issue of, is it owned by Sunnyvale? Is it owned by Santa Clara and Valley Water? And so like all of these organizations have gone back and forth and tried to not do it. It's taken our neighborhood association a lot of work to actually keep that area clean. They did end up finally putting trash cans, and we do have some unhoused residents who live there because they have no other place to live, but because they didn't have access to trash cans, they were basically just throwing stuff everywhere. So don't discount, this is my advice, don't discount the concerns about litter, and please make sure that there's a very clear, like, if people see something, like, ways to get it fixed and who to contact, and that Sunnyvale has ownership of that, because it has been a really big headache for our neighborhood. And then the other two, sorry, I'm just spewing, but two thoughts. One, I was looking through as much as I could of the map and some of the major crossing roads like Central and maybe not 101, but I wonder if there would be value, maybe this is a question to ask people, is if you had two, like a north version and a south version of the East Channel Trail, but they don't actually connect. So is there value in, say, having a trail that runs just from north of Central up, and then one that goes from south of Central down, because I can see, for example, families who are trying to get to San Miguel or Columbia and live north of Central could still benefit a lot from having a channel, even if it doesn't go all the way down south. So I'd be curious to get some feedback on that.
Connections like tunnels or bridges are definitely going to take a long time to plan, yeah, design, and construct. And in the meantime, we're not, our plan is not to close the trail. We will try to have it open to the public, and during that time, people will still be access the trail regardless of having that bridge connections.
And then, sorry, last comment. Just as this is going through, I think I was looking at the different tier crossings, tier one, two, and three, and to really prioritize the non-car traffic in this, even if that means closing down a road so that you can no longer drive over what used to be the trail, is really important. They installed a hawk signal near San Miguel Elementary on San Miguel and Duane, and it's super helpful. Like, I'm very glad it's there. Families like it. But even with that, we still see cars every once in a while and just completely ignoring it and running by. And so anything you can do to give bikes and pedestrians that priority, I think, is super important in this. But nicely done. I really appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Pronto.
Thank you very much. Let me apologize for that minor interruption to my colleagues. My follow-up is with the e-bike. I believe that before you get into electric motorbikes and what have you, but the e-bike still has a pretty high speed limit or speed capability. How do you propose to limit that so that it's not a safety hazard with other people that are maybe moving a little slower than that? And do you intend to have any cameras that might catch people who were not paying attention to any limits that we might, if somebody complained, have a way to follow up on somebody who is misbehaving?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the concerns that we've heard, and I think throughout probably the Bay Area, that's a pretty consistent theme, I think, for many agencies. That's one thing that we're going to continue to talk with our DPS folks about. Obviously, a speed limit sign would be kind of a easy suggestion for people to hopefully obey. Now, obviously, you're going to have folks that are trying to just do what they want at the end of the day. So maybe if we have, for example, the baller example at the entrance, that hopefully will slow those folks down a little bit more, the kind of a narrower space will kind of discourage a little bit of speeding. In terms of in between, along the trail, I think those are probably going to be things that we're going to continue to observe and talk to our DPS folks about. We could also set up maybe like an overall speed limit for the entire trail if we want to go down that route as well. As far as cameras are concerned, that is something that we have heard. We're exploring for sure. However, and it will be a lot easier, I think, to install a camera at the beginning or the end of a segment rather than in the middle of a segment, because typically those who do not have any power that we can connect to versus along the street is a lot easier for us to tap into an existing power source. Whether or not that can, how much of a, of how effective it will be, I think that's up for discussion, certainly. And we can talk to our DPS, Department of Public Safety, about how supportive they'll be with something like that.
And Commissioner Jansen.
Sorry, small request with the little ways to block people from going so fast. When you have a bike trailer at the back of your bike and you're trying to go through those bollards, you called them, I think, it is really hard to do. And I'm sure you know that, and I've heard that before, but like, I would take my kids when they were small enough in the bike trailer, and we would be like where Borregas dead ends just north of 101 and trying to go up that pedestrian overpass, and there's a bollard right there. It's a lot. So just, yeah, thank you. I'll stop there.
Thanks for this presentation. I'm going to echo what everybody else said. I'm super excited about this idea. There's like no good north-south way to bike there. Fair Oaks is terrifying. Wolf is marginally less terrifying, but still not great. So yeah, I'm really excited about this whole plan and everything. So first, just to build off of the question that Commissioner Pronto had about the flooding, I wonder if you're planning on looking into like green infrastructure or something, because the photos, I mean, admittedly, there's only a couple of photos, but the photos that I've seen, it's pretty much like dirt. It's dirt and then concrete, right? Mm-hmm. That's how the current state of the drainage ditch. Mm-hmm. And I think there are ways to have green infrastructure in there, which will meet people's needs for or desires for having trees and having greenery and all that kind of stuff. that can also mitigate flood situations if that's something that is that we're expecting. Are you planning to look into those and some of your alternatives?
Yes. In our detailed roadmap, which is shared in our website, has that shows the areas of opportunities. And one of the opportunities is to have a green infrastructure around where possible.
And do you have a sense of if that would mitigate sort of flood risks or anything?
That definitely helps with the storm water management. We'll have to look into how much of an area that we can accommodate to provide that infrastructure.
Great. I would love to see that as well. And I think, like, to my mind, this is a great use of land that would otherwise be subject to floods every, let's say, 100 or 50 years, because it is something that is, if you do have the flooding, it's easier to get people out and it's easier to close it off. And meanwhile, we can be using it for this great transportation corridor. So I think that's really great to my mind. Maybe I missed it, but how many alternatives are you planning to put together or present for in costing them out, or what, how many alternatives is going to be at the end of phase? Is it phase three?
In terms of alternatives, we're really limited. So it's going to be more of a short-term solutions versus while we are working on a long-term proposed trail. So for instance, when we are crossing Caltrain tracks, there's really no way to provide as a short-term alternatives. It's going to be how to utilize our current infrastructure, but try to make it more safe. So adding treatments on either a Fair Oaks or a Wolf and making it more safe for people to cross while we are working on the long-term solution.
Okay, so that's kind of how alternatives are going to be
exactly,
dealt with.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because it sounds like funding, we're going to be looking for funding for this at a later date.
Yes.
I hope we can find it because, like I said, this is an area that needs it.
And just to do a quick plug for one of the public outreach we're going to have coming up is a second survey where we're going to go out and ask the general public that very question. While we're working on getting funding and design for the long-term solutions, here are a couple of segments where we have maybe one or two options. You know, do you feel comfortable using the current roadway condition as is, or if not, you know, what kind of improvement are you looking for in order for you to be more comfortable to be on those roadways? So those are going to be the type of questions that we're going to have for the second survey that's going to be coming out soon.
And I will go onto your website after this, and because I don't think I've been getting the emails, but I should get the emails, but also I get too many emails. So I will look for that survey. And you said the city of Mountain View had noticed that fewer trash bins resulted in less trash along the path. Is that how it works?
Go ahead.
Sorry, that was probably me. Yeah. I must have misspoken. No, that's not what they say. I think they were saying having the trash bins was a plus in their opinion.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Just wanted to clarify that and echo what Commissioner Jansen said of having trash bins, I think, makes people not throw trash willy-nilly. And then everybody else kind of did all these things. Just to echo again, prioritizing the trail is over the car traffic is... The great thing about this is that it would be separate from cars, and preserving the separateness from cars to as much of an extent as possible. I'm thinking, like, there's one road at the Mountain View Sunnyvale border that has just a tree in the middle so cars can't go through it, and that's great. It's probably not feasible to implement it everywhere, but yes, ways where you can physically keep the bikes and pedestrians isolated from cars in as much way as you possibly can. I think that's going to get people to use it more because that's going to be safer. Thanks.
Commissioner Ford.
Hello. Going back to the litter thing, since we're increasing public access to the creek and the potential for litter, do we foresee any problems with the stormwater permit? Just like having that increased chance for litter.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what the. Do you mind just kind of repeating the question?
I guess my question is, does the water board know that we're planning this type of trail, and like has anyone talked to them about conflicts with the stormwater permit?
So, not quite yet at the board level. We have engaged the Valley Water District staff members. So, there's staff to, between staff to staff conversation that's already ongoing. As a matter of fact, I think we have at least one, agency between agency staff level meeting. We do have plan to go to the board eventually. As a matter of fact, I believe our next round of community engagement, in addition to coming back to this very commission, is also going to the water board to present our findings at that time. So eventually, will make its way to the board. And my sort of maybe naive assumption is that the Valley Water staff would have already maybe at some point or in time communicated with the board members about this upcoming project. Yes, it's no secret that the City of Sunnyvale is trying to utilize the East Channel for this very purpose.
And then also going back to a jurisdiction concern that I think Commissioner Jansen raised, if there is litter or if like repairs need to be done on like the trail versus the slope, who has jurisdiction over that?
We are definitely going to draft a maintenance agreement between the city and the Valley Water. It is most likely that the trail portion will be maintained by the city, and then the channel portion will be maintained by the Valley Water.
Okay, and that would include like cleanup for litter and stuff.
That's correct.
All right, any other commissioners? Seeing no one else, I think a lot of great questions were asked, and thank you for the great presentation. I have a few questions, comments. On page 8, you had mentioned that you were looking at other comparable projects and discussing how that went. And I was wondering if you talked to them about any decrease in vehicle miles traveled that they had studied during their study sessions, and what percentage of vehicle mile traveled reduction was there?
We have actually not talked to them or heard anything about VMT study since the new opening of the trail, but we will definitely reach out and see if they can provide that information.
Excellent. Okay. I live near the San Tomas Aquino Trail and use it all the time. And I'll echo what Commissioner Peronto said about the 15-mile-an-hour speed limit they have on those trails. It definitely isn't enforced. I've never seen any enforcement on it. And a lot of the e-bikes and e-scooters are going way faster than that. So any enforcement that you can think of with the Department of Public Safety would be great, because it definitely is dangerous when you have people walking around there. And I'll echo also what everyone else said about grade separation. That's one of the best things about the San Tomas Aquino Trail is all the grade separation that you don't have to worry about any of the freeways or anything. It's a fantastic solution there. So, but yeah, thank you very much for the presentation, and I'll go ahead and close the comments on that. Do I ask the public now?
You don't have to since it's a study session,
Okay.
right? Yeah. But if you want to open it, there's no one online though.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, we'll go ahead and close study session 250226 and move on to the consent calendar, item number 25-0918, to approve the Sustainability Commission meeting minutes of August 18th, 2025. I will go ahead and open public comment for this item. Please submit a speaker card to Ms. Raby, raise your digital hand now, or dial *9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Since seeing no one in here and there's no one online, let's close public comment. I'll now ask for a motion from my colleagues. Go ahead.
I so move.
Is there a second? Commissioner Ford.
Seconded.
Is there any discussion or advocacy on the motion? Seeing none, Ms. Raby, can you please conduct a roll call vote?
Yes. for approval of consent calendar item 25-0918. Commissioner Pronto, how do you vote?
I vote yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Koons?
Yes.
Commissioner Chang?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
Commissioner Ford?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pistone?
Yes.
Excuse me. Thank you. Chair Nabhan?
Abstain.
Okay, and Commissioner Jansen?
Yes.
Thank you. Six yeses, one abstain. By majority, the motion passes. Thank you.
All right, next we have consideration for potential study issues. As a reminder, there is a study issue form that commissioners can complete and submit to staff anytime during the year. Commissioners will review, sponsor, and rank study issues. But also want to mention that based on the input at the August 26th City Council study session, Council appears likely to make changes to the existing study issue process. And with that in mind, staff recommends that board and commissions postpone sponsoring of study issues at their September and October meetings. I'll ask anyways, have any study issues, potential study issues been submitted, Ms. Raby?
No, there have not.
Okay, thank you. This next portion of the agenda is for oral reports and announcements by commissioners and the staff to share information. Do commissioners have any non-agenda items or comments? A reminder to my colleagues to use the raised hand button to indicate they wish to speak. Vice Chair Pistone.
Yeah, I just have an event that looks super exciting, but I'm going to be out of town. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson is going to be doing an event on October 8th at the Computer History Museum. And she's like a hero of climate action that is hopeful and practical and not doomy and everything, and is also a scientist. So she's very cool, and I've gotten inspired by a lot of the stuff that I've heard her talk about on various podcasts and books and everything. So if anybody goes to it, I would love to hear back in a Brown Act compliant way how it went. But yeah, people should go to that. And I went to Viva Calle last 2 weeks ago, and that was good as well. So yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else? Commissioner Koons.
Yes, I just wanted to remark that I'm planning on attending the State of the City this weekend and hope to see a lot of my fellow commissioners there.
Excellent. Thank you. Commissioner Pronto.
I have been working for some time with an organization called No Carbon Fuel to provide environmental information to high school students, primarily in community college. And I just wanted to note that the organization is interested in collaborating with the high school district and their student climate initiative. And so I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Council Liaison, Srinivasan, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I wanted to mention State of the City. Thanks, Commissioner Koons, for mentioning that. That's this Saturday, 8:30. There will be a council meeting. It's the shortest council meeting, just attendance, and then break into the State of the City. So hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Ms. Raby, do you have any non-agenda items or staff comments?
Yes, I do. So as mentioned, State of the City is this weekend, so won't go over that too much, but I also wanted to just plug in that staff and environmental services have been working on our scoreboard updates. So those will be launched in time for State of the City. We will be including our 2023 community-wide greenhouse gas inventory information. Most of the graphs are going to be all updated on that site. And then we will be also updating a lot of our CAP progress updates. So keep a lookout for that. And I will most likely follow up in an email too when they're officially launched. And on the 20th as well, it's going to be our coastal cleanup day event. So that is going to be from 9 a.m. to noon. The Sunnyvale site that we are hosting is full, but you can still go on to cleanacreek.org and sign up and register for another local creek cleanup event. And then on October 5th is the annual Diwali Festival. This time, this year, it's going to be in downtown Sunnyvale on Murphy Avenue. And it's going to be from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you can attend, that is where it will be this year. And then on October 21st, the Office of Equity, Access, and Inclusion is hosting an event called Sharing Their Stories, an LGBTQ plus panel dialogue from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And it's going to be in person here at City Hall. Registration is required. So if you are interested and you want to learn more about the event and register, visit sunnyvale.ca.gov and then search Sunnyvale Unity or contact 408-730-7950 to attend and register. On October 25th, we are going to be hosting our EV Frunk or Treat event, and it is going to be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 433 Charles Street, so right across the street near the Charles Street Gardens. It's a fun Frunk or Treat, like Halloween-themed activity or an event, so it'll be really fun, so bring your families if you are interested. And on October 27th, we are going to be hosting our sustainability speaker series event called United for Disability and Climate Justice. It's going to be from 7 to 8:30 p.m. and registration is also required. And this is an online event, so just register online. And you can visit sunnyvale.ca.gov and search sustainability speaker series, or you can contact our ESD line at 408-730-7717. So that's it for upcoming events. And so then just wanted to announce that our next meeting is going to be October 20th here at City Hall in the Redwood Conference Room at 7 p.m. And I also wanted to announce that we're still working on our joint study session for the 2024 greenhouse gas inventory and CAP updates, but tentatively we are going to hold October 23rd as that meeting date starting at 7 p.m. And we're going to actually be in the council chambers this time because there will be a meeting here around that same time. So keep a lookout for my emails. They should be coming soon with more of an update there, but for now, tentatively, it's that date. And for TCMAC or tentative council meeting agenda calendar, there's a few items that I wanted to list for you all. So on September 30th, item 25-0814 is a presentation from Pacific Gas and Electric Company Local Government Forum by Sergio Jimenez, the government relations representative from PG&E. So if you're interested in hearing a presentation from PG&E, that's happening on the 30th. Another item on that same date is 25-0610, amending Chapter 16.52 of the Sunnyvale Municipal Code to adopt by the 2025 California Energy Code and Green Building Standards. So staff's going to be presenting to council to recommend that they adopt the 2025 building code. And on October 21st, there's an item 25-0569, evaluate the City of Sunnyvale study issue process. So consultants will be going back to City Council with more recommendations on the study issue process. And then the last item I wanted to announce was on October 28th, 25-04998, 6 p.m., a special council meeting. It's going to be a study session, and Madeline and I are going to be taking the 2024 greenhouse gas emissions inventory and our CAP updates to the City Council. And this is going to be an annual study session. So this is the first one where we're doing. So the presentation that you all are going to be receiving on potentially the 23rd, whatever you recommend and we discuss there, we're going to be taking it to council the very next week. So excited for that. And with that, unless Madeline has anything else, no. Okay, with that, I am done with my staff comments. Thank you.
Well, thank you. A lot of exciting events coming up soon, so thank you for that. Now let's have a look at our annual work plan. Ms. Raby, can you share the work plan?
Yes. Okay, so, all right, so our October 20th meeting, I still have the CAP update here, and that's just because, again, it's still tentative for the 23rd, but once we have approval from the city manager to use the council chambers, I will be adding the special meeting joint study session on the 23rd here and moving the CAP update down, but otherwise, on October 20th, we're going to be, that's the final month to propose and sponsor study issues. So again, as Chair Napan mentioned, staff, we're pausing for now, and then staff will be providing an update on how to move forward on study issues once the city council hears from the consultant one more time. So around sometime in late October, we're supposed to be giving you all an update on how to move forward. But then we're still planning on February being the workshop for the study issue process next year. And then we will be reviewing the 2026 draft master work plan. So I'll be working with staff from each department that typically provide you all with presentations or study issues or study sessions, excuse me. I will be basically drafting a skeleton version of next year's work plan. And then I'll be showing it all to you in the next meeting, and then you can provide me any comments, recommendations, and also commissioner presentations if you have any to plug into that work plan. And then another change that I made, I will be going on vacation in December, so we are canceling the December meeting. That is the executive decision we made. So that otherwise, I think that's all that I all of the changes that I made. And then I'll just scroll down here to any of the additional items yet to be scheduled, as well as additional presentations, updates from staff requested by the commission. So if you want to discuss anything, feel free to unmute. But otherwise, this is the work plan.
Commissioner Jansen.
Sorry, I promised to keep my comment short. For the Lakewood Library, when is that supposed to be done? I'm just wondering if we should take it off if it's going to be done in like January, but maybe it's not going to be done in January. I can't remember.
Right now we're looking at April for the construction completion date. So that'll probably move into the following year. I'm not sure if this was an update on construction. I'm not sure. I don't recall what this, I don't think I was here when we all did the work plan. So I'm not sure what the update is for. If anyone remembers adding that, was it an update on construction or like completion of the building?
I don't remember either, but okay. I'm assuming that staff will be coming back with an update. So I'll just, when I go and reach out to them, I'll see what the status is on this part.
Commissioner Pronto.
I've had a item on here, multifamily housing electrical vehicle charging, for something I put on like last spring, I think. And I've not been in contact with the guest speaker since then. He may have talked with staff independently. I had encouraged him to do that. I don't know if maintaining this on the list is that has much value any longer. And we can always put it back on if it pops up again.
Okay. So would you like me to just remove it for next time?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thanks.
I had a question about the municipal zero emission vehicle replacement update. I know the city has got a lot of new electric vehicles, and I was wondering if that's something that we can hear soon or...
Yes, we can. And Madeline and I will be presenting that most likely also in our October meeting. So when we provide the CAP progress updates, we usually have a highlight on how many vehicles we have transitioned to EVs. So we'll be sure to highlight that in October for you. And then we'll just keep doing it as we keep purchasing those vehicles.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. Seeing no other comments on the work plan, go ahead and this meeting will adjourn at 8:14 p.m. And I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting. Thank you.